probably the core teaching, the most fundamental and central teaching of the Bible, is simply this. There's only one true God. Hear, O Israel, the Lord thy God, thy Lord is one. But the question is, which one is the true one? Because when you read the Bible, you get two very different versions of the one true God. In the Old Testament, God is depicted in anthropomorphic terms. He's depicted as the man upstairs. And he's not a very nice man upstairs. He's more like the guy upstairs that keeps pounding on the floor with his foot because he thinks you're making too much noise. He's the man upstairs who is big, all-powerful, kind of ill-tempered, judgmental, vengeful, just not nice. He's the man upstairs that's a stickler for rules. And his rules are all negative. They're all restrictive. They're all about what you shall not do. And should you do what you should not do, should you break one of his rules, the man upstairs, well, he holds a grudge. And he's going to get you for it, and he might get your children too. He's just that kind of God. He's just that kind of God. This is the God of Moses, the God of the Ten Commandments, at least how they are most often portrayed in the Old Testament. Now, to be fair, there are parts of the Old Testament have a much more progressive, much more enlightened, much more positive depiction of God. The first chapter of Genesis, parts of Deuteronomy, certain of the Psalms, a little bit of Proverbs. The book of Jonah, if you take it as a parable, which is how it was almost certainly intended, there are more enlightened parts in the Old Testament. But by and large, these are few and far between. God is mostly kind of like, well, it's like the a neighborhood I used to live in. We had a homeowners association, and it seemed like most of us were young and working, and we didn't have time to participate in the homeowners association, so it was almost all the retired people in the community that ran for office. And this one guy got elected to office in a meeting few of us attended. And he apparently had way too much time on his hands, not nearly enough to do, and an exaggerated sense of importance and authority. And this guy spent all his days driving around the neighborhood very slowly with a notebook and the book of our rules and regulations of our community association. And he would make notes, and he would write you up if he thought your grass was a little too long, or if he thought your hedges needed to be trimmed, or if you had three cars parked in the driveway, even if it was like Thanksgiving, because the rules said you could only have two. And then he would send you letters. By the way, we had a special meeting about a month after he was elected, and he was replaced. Because he'd also written letters to pretty much every other member of the Homeowners Association, too. He was a hard man to please. Well, that's kind of what God's like, according to the Old Testament. He's like that guy, only he doesn't just write letters. He's got more clout. But then when you turn to the New Testament, well, God's so much nicer. The New Testament God, the God of Jesus Christ, is just totally different. It's different as night and day from that old man upstairs, that mean old man upstairs. This God isn't like some potentate that is just holding his power over your head, ready to come down on you with an iron fist. No, this God is like a father to us. And a wonderful father, the kind of father we all wish we had, the kind of father we all wish we could have been. An all-loving and all-forgiving and all-providing father. A father like the father in Jesus' parable of the prodigal son. That kind of dad. And whereas the Old Testament thought God was all about rules, all about law, according to the New Testament, God is really all about love. We're told, let us love one another because love springs from God, and one who loves is coming to know and understand God. And one who does not love has not even become acquainted with God, does not and never did really know him, because God is love. If we love one another, God abides in us, and his love is brought to completion and is perfected in us. God is love, and he who dwells and continues in love dwells and continues in God, and God dwells and continues in him. That's a very different kind of depiction of God than from the Old Testament. Again, in the Old Testament, Moses gives us 10 commandments, and all of them shalt nots. In the New Testament, Jesus reduces it to just one, and it's a positive one. Jesus says, I give you a new commandment, that you should love one another. Just as I have loved you, so too you shall love one another. It is by this that people will know you are my followers. If you love one another and keep on showing love among yourselves. That's a very different kind of set of rules, isn't it? A very different set of rules. He sums up the whole Old Testament with just two of its commandments and two that aren't shalt nots. The first one and one like unto it that you find in Deuteronomy. Jesus teaches us that you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the great and most important commandment. And there's a second like unto it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. These two sum up, and upon them depend all of the law and the prophets, all of the prophecies in the Old Testament, all of the rules, the Ten Commandments, and the hundreds that added onto it in the book of Leviticus. They're really summed up with just love each other, love God. Because as Paul explained in Romans, love is the fulfilling of the law. If you love each other, if you love somebody, you don't have to be told, well, don't take their stuff. You want to give them stuff. Don't hurt them. You want to protect them. If you love someone, it makes all those other commandments superfluous. Now, of course, in Moses' defense, who knows? You know, the way it's depicted in Exodus, he comes down the mountain with these tablets. And in the little time he's been away, led by his own brother, for crying out loud, they have made a golden calf and are cavorting around it. Well, who knows? Before he did the rewrite, when he broke those original tablets, maybe they said God is love. And he looked at that, and he looked at these people and said, you know what? These people need some rules. They're not ready for this. They might take love one another. They might take that wrong. I'm sorry. These people need rules. I mean, if you tell people don't kill each other. They're not a real sophisticated bunch. Although some of us have told our children that. But I don't think we really believe they do it. As I say, these two representations of one God are as different as night and day. So I repeat, which one is the true one? And more specifically, which one is the right one for people who call themselves Christians, followers of Jesus Christ? Because logically, one would assume that individuals who call themselves Christians would want to share in that New Testament Jesus Christ concept of God. But curiously, so many of them don't seem to. This is just one of my pet peeves. This is something I haven't understood since I was given my first Bible at 12. And I actually started to read the thing. I just don't get it. I just don't get why so many of the people who are most vocal in proclaiming themselves to be Christians and our nation to be a Christian nation don't subscribe to a Christian concept of God. They're still stuck on the old guy upstairs, pounding on the floor. They're still stuck on the Old Testament God. And I don't get it. I just don't get it. Like our nation's founders, I think people have a right to do that. I mean, our founders, and I agree with this, they had one shalt not. You shall not have a state religion. Everybody shall have the freedom to believe and worship the way they are led to. Or to not believe and not worship if they are so led. But I don't understand that if you're led to believe in an Old Testament God, why you'd want to call yourself a Christian. It's just a matter of truth in advertising. You know, if you advertise yourself to be a Christian, you ought to have a Jesus Christ kind of God concept. I mean, doesn't that make sense? Of course, in truth, the God of the Old Testament and the God of the New Testament are really the same God. God's the same today, yesterday, and forever. It's not God that changes. God didn't mellow with age like vintage wine or good whiskey. No, God's the same. It's just that our understanding of God has grown through time and has been pushed forward by revelations of people like Moses and Jesus Christ. And this is actually true of all human knowledge, isn't it? If you go back to the time of Moses, you're going back, we don't know exactly when that time was, but we're going back at least 3,000 years. And maybe closer to 4. Think of how we've progressed in every other area since that time. Think of how we've progressed just in the 91 years of our church's history. We've come a long way, haven't we? Things have changed dramatically. I mean, think of, when this church got started, they had just quit manufacturing the Model T Ford and moved into the Model A. Now, they sold millions of Model T Fords in the teens before the First World War. And for the time, they were a real breakthrough. It was an affordable car that was mass-produced. Anybody could own one. But if I had a choice between a Model T Ford, and I've driven one, and say my 21st century town car, I'll keep the Lincoln. Because it has all sorts of things that Model T didn't have. For instance, you can get it in colors other than black. Now, a lot of Lincolns are black, but it does come in other colors. It has windows. They never thought about that when they had the Model T. It has doors that open on both sides. In a Model T Ford, only one door opened. The other door is fake. You don't have to get out of the car. Well, actually, you do, but you don't have to take the seat out of the car to fill the gas tank. The gas tank was under the front seat. You don't have to, and this is a biggie for me, because I'm not as young as I once was. You don't have to physically crank the darn thing to get it started in the morning. You can just turn the key. I mean, it's worth it right there. Model T, cutting edge in its day, but I think I'll stick with 21st century cars. I think I'd like to stick with them. Maybe we need, and I'm not, we don't even have to have a 21st century God concept. I'm talking about just getting to a first century God concept. Okay, Moses' insight into the nature of God was unimaginably advanced for the time. Because Moses' actual insight was that there's one God, not many. In Moses' day and for probably 2,000 years after, the majority of human beings believed there were many gods. And Moses' insight, his revelation, was that that one God is not capricious, doesn't act on whim. That God acts according to order. There is order in the universe, and that order is divine order. It is God-inspired. So everything happens for a reason. That concept, that vision of Moses, is the basis of all science, isn't it? If you didn't believe there was a reason things happened, science wouldn't work. But things happen in an orderly way. 2 + 2 is always 4. And what Moses perceived was there's an intelligence behind all that. Now, over time, religion took that one God and turned it into a big man. And over time, religion took divine order and turned it into a kind of follow the orders. But Moses' insight was brilliant. And Jesus took that insight to a whole new level a couple of millennia later. It was as different as, well, Galileo's vision of the celestial bodies was after he looked through his telescope. When before him everybody was just looking at the stars and planets with the naked eye, Galileo had this telescope. And all of a sudden, I mean, just try to imagine what that was like. Well, Jesus Christ put a telescope to God. And he saw things that were as advanced from Moses as Galileo's vision of the celestial universe was advanced from those that came before. It was an eye-opening experience. It was an experience that set the spiritual world on its head. But unfortunately, though religion recognized that this was something special, it took them a while. It's taken them a while to let go of that old man in the sky God. For one reason, we kind of like that old man in the sky. Mostly because as religious people, we always think he's on our side. For instance, just this morning on Facebook, I saw a sign from a Baptist church that apparently had its air conditioner stolen, a popular thing right here in St. Louis, for the copper. And the sign said, the people that stole our air conditioners need to keep one because it's hot where they're going. Now, that's not the God of Jesus Christ. That's not the all-forgiving Father and the prodigal son. But you know, a part of us would kind of like it if God was like that. You know, this all-loving, all-forgiving God just doesn't do the stuff we want him to. He just forgives people. What's that? He just loves people, even people. I mean, it's okay when he loves people we love, but he loves people we don't love. Like, you know, that's what the book of Jonah is really all about. That's made clear in the Sermon on the Mount. I mean, what a frustrating God. He won't even pound on the ceiling no matter how loud the neighbors are down underneath. That, what fun is that? Well, actually, it's a lot of fun because there are probably people that think we're making too much noise too. But in any case, I can understand that old model of God. I can even understand the attraction of that old model of God. But don't you think, after 2,000 years, it's time for us to get into not the 21st, but just the first century concept of God, the New Testament concept of God, God as was revealed to Jesus Christ when he looked through his spiritual telescope? I think it's time, and to just briefly conclude by going through a little bit of what that God is actually like. If God is love, then anything that's true of love is true of God. I want to go through something. I want to go through a little bit of what is certainly the clearest treatise on love, not just in the Bible, but maybe written. A little bit of the 13th chapter of Paul's 1 Corinthians. But I'm going to change a word. I'm going to make a substitution. I'm going to substitute the word God for the word love. Because according to Jesus Christ, and according to Paul, and according to the New Testament, they should be interchangeable. So it is God, as well as love, that endures long and is patient and kind. God will never get impatient with us. No matter how slow we seem to be to get it, God never grows impatient with us. Love never is envious, never boils over with jealousy, is not boastful or vainglorious, does not display itself haughtily. So that's true of God. God is never envious. God is never jealous. God never boils over. Is not conceited. Is not inflated with pride. And God's pride can't be hurt. Is not rude. Does not act unbecomingly. God is not like the guy in my homeowners association. He did all that stuff that God is not like. But God's not that old guy. He's not the angry old man upstairs. God does not insist on its own rights in its own way, for it is not self-seeking, touchy, fretful, or resentful. God isn't a stickler for the rules. God isn't a stickler for the rules. God takes no account of evil done to it, pays no attention to suffered wrongs. God won't get you for that. If God gets you, you just get loved and forgiven. God does not rejoice at injustice or unrighteousness, but rejoices when right and truth prevail. God's a positive thinker. That's what this is telling us. God, it's telling us what The advice Paul gives us in Philippians, the way we should think, reflects the way divine mind works. Whatever is true, whatever is worthy of reverence, honorable and seemly, just and pure, whatever is lovely and lovable, kind and gracious, if there's any virtue, if there's any excellent, anything worthy of praise, think on and weigh and take account of these things. Fix your mind on them. These are the things about you, about the world, about humanity that the mind of God is fixed on. Whatever is pure, whatever is of good report, if there is any virtue. God is into our virtues, not our vices. Those are do-it-yourself projects. God bears up under anything and everything that comes along, is ever ready to believe the best in every person, is ready to believe the best in you. God's hopes are fadeless under all circumstances, and God endures everything without weakening. God's hope for you is never quenched. And God never fails. And God never fails. God may need to be patient, may need to be kind sometimes with us, but that's just God's nature, and God will never fail. That's the kind of God Jesus Christ believed, that we should believe in and worship and pray to. And let's do that now. Let's prepare now for our time to pray together. Let's know that each one of us is going to be enriched in our own experience of God as we pray together. Let's know that no matter how things may seem, in reality, there is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in our lives. God the good, omnipotent. Together, there is only one presence and one power in the universe and at work in my life. God, the good, omnipotent, and so it is.